Welcome to the Big Z Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hartzler's Quality Housing and DAC Vitamins and Minerals.
Welcome back into the Big Z Sports Show on Z Country 99.9, presented by DAC Vitamins and Minerals. Joe Geckler, Adam Selweski, Eric McRoy in the Parkway Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Studios. And it's time to talk a little NFL football. We're going to welcome in our guy from Cincinnati, Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 and TheAthletic.com. Mo, how we doing on this blistering cold January Friday?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Let's jump right into the NFL this week. Yesterday, ESPN released an article about the turmoil in the locker room and in the front office of the Cleveland Browns. Your thoughts on that, and can you see Hugh Jackson being a part of something like that with spending his time in Cincinnati? You were around him a lot. Does that surprise you in Cleveland?
Not really. A couple of things. You've seen Jimmy Haslam cycle through GMs and coaches, which would suggest instability with the owner. And look, here's the thing about the Hugh Jackson part of that story that I think is interesting. Seth Wickersham, the writer, describes the moment when they fired Hugh Jackson with the owner, the GM, and Hugh in the room. And they tell him they're going to fire him, and he responds, quote, "Get the F out of my office." I'm going to guess the owner didn't want anybody to know that. I'm going to guess the general manager didn't want anybody to know that. That's coming from Hugh Jackson. And to me, it's why I would give great pause, aside from the win-loss record. It's why I would think twice about hiring him as my head coach. He's free and easy with what he tells you. He'll leak what's happening behind closed doors. He'll undermine people. And I think ultimately that was among the things that kind of led to his undoing. And I think if you're a Browns fan, it does make you think, despite all the excitement over Baker Mayfield, and understandable excitement, and I think despite feeling like they may have gotten the head coaching search right, as long as that franchise is owned by the person described in that story, I bet on bad owners. I do it with the Bengals, and I do it with the Browns. I bet against bad owners, I should say. And you know, Baker Mayfield might change a lot of things in Cleveland, but he's not going to change the guy who owns the team. And you just hope that maybe the Jimmy Haslam that's described in that piece is not the Jimmy Haslam who's going to oversee this next era of Cleveland Browns football.
So, Mo, what you're saying in a roundabout way is Jimmy Haslam's more the problem than the other coaches they've brought in the past, and necessarily the GMs. Jimmy Haslam has his finger on everything, and if it's not done his way, it's the highway, right?
Kind of feels that way. Look, it feels like he doesn't know how to assemble groups of people who work well together. He does. It's felt before, and I think you get this sense reading that article, is he hasn't done a very good job of assembling people whose philosophies are in line. I think that was obviously an issue when they hired Hugh Jackson and had him, you know, working under Sashi Brown. What you're kind of hoping for now is that he gives John Dorsey, a very qualified general manager, carte blanche to run the football end of the organization. Maybe he stays out of it a little bit. And I think also allows for some time. Look, the Browns, there's going to be a ton of hype surrounding that team this year. They're going to be on primetime TV a bunch. People are going to be, you know, they're going to be a sexy pick to make the playoffs. And yet, you know, you do have a quarterback that hasn't played a full season yet. You have a first-time head coach. You have a lot of youth on that team. You're in a tough division. I hope, for the sake of Browns fans and you know, the particulars involved, that if maybe expectations, the wildest expectations, aren't met, I hope that Jimmy Haslam doesn't decide to blow it up for what feels like an upteenth straight time. I think you have to allow, they have a nucleus in place, and I think they have their quarterback. Now you kind of have to step back and just allow for that thing to grow, allow for the roster to develop, allow for John Dorsey to fully put his program in place, allow for Freddie Kitchens to fully put his program in place, and guide Baker Mayfield to the next step of his career. It's often felt to me like that franchise has lacked patience. And while it feels like things are trending upward, the guy depicted in that story is not a very patient owner, and the guy that we've seen cycle through so many personnel people and coaches, that's not a very patient owner, and I still think some patience there is needed.
Well, obviously, it's the offseason for the Cleveland Browns, but they're still staying in the news, as are the Cincinnati Bengals, and we'll go to the Bengals now. Obviously, Zach Taylor cannot be officially hired as the Cincinnati Bengals' new head coach until the Rams are done with the Super Bowl, win or lose, but we know that's been there for a couple of weeks. This week, though, Mo, there's been a couple names floated out there, news reports saying that there's going to be a coach coming from Oakland, and then Jack Del Rio as well as a defensive coach. What can you talk to us about that?
Well, Brian Callahan, John Gruden kind of spilled the beans. Brian Callahan was Gruden's quarterback's coach last season in Oakland, and at the Senior Bowl, John was asked about Brian Callahan, and he said, well, he's going to leave us to go be the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati. And there's two things about that. Number one, Brian Callahan's career ascension, if you just look at his resume and the timeline, it would remind you of Zach Taylor's, obviously without the head coaching experience. But I think the other part of this is you wonder about Bill Callahan. Bill Callahan is Brian Callahan's dad. Bill Callahan was Zach Taylor's coach in college in Nebraska. He's a former NFL head coach who's taken a team to a Super Bowl, and he's bounced around the league as an offensive line coach over the last decade or so, and is held in very high regard. And even before Brian Callahan's name was mentioned as a Bengals possibility, there's been a lot of speculation that Bill Callahan will come here to be the offensive line coach. And so you might have the dynamic of the son being higher in rank than the dad, both on the same coaching staff. In terms of what kind of offensive coordinator Brian Callahan would be, nobody knows and nobody can ask because the Bengals can't officially hire him. I guess they could, but I don't think they will until the head coach is announced. I've said this to you before, though. I do think if you're a first-time offensive coordinator, you've got the benefit of having a veteran quarterback, two 1,000-yard wide receivers, the AFC's leading rusher. There's some talent there to have some instant success, but it might be offset by a lot of inexperience.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And if you look at how bad the offensive line has been over the last couple of years, too, I think they need to get that shored up. And bringing in a veteran coach like a Bill Callahan to help coach that offensive line, that could help Brian as well on the offensive side.
There's no doubt. Look, this team started the offensive line overhaul last offseason, and it didn't end with, you know, drafting Billy Price and trading for Cordy Glenn. It was going to be at best a 2-year process. And look, I think the offensive line, all things considered, I think that unit played about as well as you could expect, but it was far from good and far from consistent. And they've really got to figure out what they're doing at right tackle. They've really got to figure some things out on the interior. And that, you know, that's obviously, I think, a major point of emphasis for this team in the offseason. They'll have their third offensive line coach in as many years. They're going to be moving on from some guys that just really haven't panned out. Yeah, you're right. I mean, if this offense is going to take a major step forward, look, they at times this past season, statistically, Andy Dalton was fine, and Tyler Boyd was a breakout player, and A.J. Green, before he got hurt, was productive, and, you know, Joe Mixon had a good season. What kept that offense, I think, from, you know, getting to that next level was the play of the offensive line. That's got to improve. It's been a problem for this team for 3 years now, and as long as it continues, with the quarterback limitations they have, they'll never reach their full potential as long as this O-line continues to be average at best.
Well, Mo, there's, you know, as Joe stated earlier, I came in here, I needed to get some answers on my Steelers. I'll tell you what, as a Steelers fan, they usually don't have a lot of turmoil in the organization, and with the entire Le'Veon situation all of last year, and now this Antonio Brown situation developing at the end of the year, I noticed a tweet that Pro Football Talk put out, and you retweeted it, where Mike Tomlin is basically telling the Steelers player that he only tolerates Antonio Brown during the week because he's so good on Sundays. Do you feel that part of the issue in Pittsburgh right now is Mike Tomlin, or do you feel that it's more Antonio Brown, you know, has reportedly been more worried about himself more so than the team?
Well, you know, I think Mike Tomlin's an excellent coach, and if he were to move on from Pittsburgh, there would be a dozen teams pushing each other out of the way to get a chance to hire him. I'm a big, big Mike Tomlin fan, but the thing that I can relate to, and it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, is Chad Johnson / Chad Ochocinco here, because I think Marvin Lewis did the same thing. You tolerated what you got during the week because what you got on Sunday was so good. I think, unfortunately, that the likelihood is that shelf life is never going to be very, very long, and it certainly wasn't for Chad in Cincinnati. I think if you look back on that time here, and obviously you have to go back more than a decade ago, I think there was a lot of enabling done by the head coaches that allowed Chad to go from someone who was fun and endearing and great on Sundays to someone who was a pain in the neck during the week and then decreasingly great on Sundays. It seems to me like that's what's happening there. Now, you know, they have, I would argue, a stronger organization. And frankly, I think Antonio Brown's a better player, but I do think you have to, I think you have to examine it. I don't know that we're going to have the answer. Can Mike Tomlin figure out a way to, you know, mitigate the distractions and what Antonio Brown does Monday through Saturday while at the same time not compromising the production that he and that franchise need on Sundays? The reality is he is going to be older. The older you get, chances are the less productive you're going to be. He's making a lot of money, which might make it hard to move him. I think they're going to have to figure out a way to forge not necessarily a peaceful coexistence, but your more typical coach-player relationship where Mike Tomlin's allowed to discipline Antonio Brown and figures out a way to get him to be, you know, less of a news item during the week and while still getting what that franchise desperately needs on Sundays. I don't know if Mike Tomlin can do that, but it feels to me like whatever approach they're using with Antonio Brown is not working. So I'm not sure why you would continue to treat Antonio Brown the way Mike Tomlin apparently has.
And Mo, let's transition now to the conference championship games from last week. I'm sure you've talked about it ad nauseum on your show this week in Cincinnati on ESPN 1530. But let's talk about the first game of the day. That's the Los Angeles Rams and the New Orleans Saints. 26-23, the Rams win in overtime, but in controversial fashion. Your thoughts on how that game ended and the obvious blown no pass interference call?
Well, you know, I think the play itself has been beaten to death. I guess the two things that I kind of wonder, number one, I keep hearing about how this is such a black eye for the NFL, and yet I haven't heard a broadcast partner announce they're pulling out of their deal with the NFL, and I haven't seen a sponsor bail from the National Football League. And so you can go on Twitter all you want and say you're done with the league. Your eyeballs will be on the Super Bowl next Sunday, and the thing that matters most to this sport are its TV partners and its corporate partners. Neither of which have left. So you can say all you want about how bad the officiating is and how it's such a huge scandal for the National Football League. If it's not costing them either of those relationships, frankly, they don't care. And the idea that Roger Goodell, who, look, he does a press conference the Friday of every Super Bowl. He is undoubtedly going to be asked about the officiating. It's going to be interesting to hear what he has to say. But this idea that, well, the league should make a statement, what would they say? Who does that appease? What does it do? I'm less interested in a statement about what happened, and I'm more interested in a series of thoughts about what will happen next. And right now, Roger Goodell and the NFL can't tell you that because that involves more than just, you know, hey, we're going to have more replay, or look, there's going to be more things that are reviewed. That requires an off-season of getting coaches together, the competition committee together, players being on board, owners being on board, the officials being on board, and then coming up with newer ways to ensure that that we don't have a situation like that in New Orleans last week ever again. You're not going to get that this week, and frankly, you're not going to get it next week either. You're going to get that deep into the off season, and so we all know those officials screwed up. I'm not sure what Roger Goodell confirming what we already know is really going to do for us, and in particular fans of the New Orleans Saints.
And Mo, obviously, if you look at that game, and you know, one topic we're going to be talking about here coming up after we get done talking to you is that we're going to talk about, does the NFL need to somehow incorporate the NFL or the penalties, the blatant pass interference call that was missed, and certain penalties, should they be allowed to be reviewed, or do you think they should leave it alone?
I am not in favor of replay just because I'm not in favor of stoppages. That said, I understand the world we live in, And in sports, the world we live in means we have more people gambling on these games than ever before. And the NFL can tell you all they want that that's not a consideration for them. They're lying through their teeth. Gambling is easier than ever. It's more accessible. It's more mainstream. There's less of a stigma. That means that there are more people than ever before who have a vested interest in the outcome of these games. The more people who have a vested interest in the outcome of these games, whether it's purely emotional or simply financial, that puts a premium on getting the call right. And so as much as I don't like it when the game continues to be stopped because we've got to go to replay, I understand the reality that we're living in here. And so, yeah, we're going to get more. It's only natural. And you know, Sunday might have been, you know, what tips things further in favor of a lot of replay or expanded replay. But we've been heading down this road for a while now. And so, yeah, I see more in every sport. But I think it has less to do with let's ensure that we get legitimate outcomes for the players. I think, quite frankly, it has a heck of a lot more to do with there's way too much money exchanging hands based on outcomes of games that now we have to do every single thing we can to ensure that we get the proper results.
And if we look at the second game of the night last Sunday in the Arctic sub-zero temperatures in Kansas City, New England wins in overtime 37-31. First time in a long time in the NFL, maybe I think it was NFL history, that both conference championship games went to overtime. But New England headed to their third straight Super Bowl. Your thoughts on that game? Obviously some of the officiating, and that was questioned as well. But the overtime, New England pulls it out as a veteran club normally does.
Well, you know, much like the NFL, I said this on my show this week, your biggest deficiencies often catch up to you at the worst possible times. And I think for the league itself, it did with the officiating, but I think for the Kansas City Chiefs, it did. Defensively, they were terrible all year long. They had opportunities in overtime specifically to get off the field on 3rd and 10. And without reinventing the wheel, the New England Patriots extended drives, and then Andy Reid sat on his timeouts with an exhausted defense, and I will never understand that, why he didn't give them a break when it was abundantly clear to everybody that his defense was totally winded. I felt like, look, I think Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. I have a world of respect for the Patriots. The Kansas City Chiefs blew that game with the lining up in the neutral zone penalty, and then with just the sheer inability to get stops by a defense that was the big fear all year long. Yeah, you got Pat Mahomes. Yeah, you got this offense. Can you get a stop? Can you get off the field when you have to? All year long for the Chiefs, the answer we thought it was going to be no, and what happened against New England confirmed those fears.
Mo, how crazy was it to sit there and watch New England, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, whomever you want to, you know, give the credit to just sit there and watch for 2.5 straight hours, whatever defense Kansas City was in, all they did is went against they just did the opposite of what Kansas City was set up for the entire game, kind of the same way that they've got past the Chargers and any big game they had this year. They just literally outthink any team they're playing when it comes down to needing a victory.
Cliche, Brady and Belichick are playing chess. Usually whoever they're playing is playing checkers. And unfortunately, it seems to happen to Andy Reid more often than not. But again, at the end of the game, I'm yelling at the TV, they're going to throw to Edelman or Gronkowski. On 3rd and 10, who'd Tom Brady throw the football to? Edelman and Gronkowski. That's the frustrating thing about him. For as forward-thinking and as innovative as the Patriots can be, it wasn't like they did anything that was that far out of the ordinary offensively. They just simply couldn't stop them, Kansas City. And again, that's a really tough loss to take when you're a play or two away from ending it, or at least putting your offense in a position to win the game, and you can't because it wasn't like the Patriots necessarily did anything revolutionary to beat them.
Mo, we won't put you through the agony of talking about the Pro Bowl, but I will ask you, will you watch for the Pro Bowl on Sunday?
The last time I watched the Pro Bowl was 1987.
You're old enough to remember that?
Yeah, I was 10 years old, and I thought, okay, there's football on. And then it quickly became abundantly clear that that really wasn't football. So the answer is no, I will not see a a second of the Pro Bowl if I have anything to do with it.
Absolutely. Well, Mo, we appreciate the time. Have a good show today. We'll talk to you next Friday about the Super Bowl coming up in a week. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, man. Thanks.
Yep, that's Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati and TheAthletic.com joining us here on the Big Z Sports Show to talk about the NFL, the championship games, and other issues going on around the league. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and we'll have more conversation about the NFL. We'll get into more of our hot topic on whether the NFL should bring in the replay to certain penalties or whatever. We'll all three have our opinion on that topic. You're listening to the Big Z Sports Show presented by DAC Vitamins and Minerals with Joe Geckler, Adam Soweski, and Eric McRoy on Big Z Sports on Z Country 99.9.
This podcast has been a presentation of Big Z Sports, brought to you by DAC Vitamins and Minerals and Hartzler's Quality Housing.